Thanks, Eric. And this has been a pretty fascinating session so far. I'm really enjoying it. Lots of kind of varying topics. So I'm going to switch gears a little bit and talk about some work where we're trying to kind of automate monitoring large numbers of discrete disturbances at a time. So just acknowledging my co-authors, my boss, Mike Dunaway, and then a couple folks from the Western Geographic Science Center of the USGS, Miguel Villarreal and Travis Poitras, have all been kind of scheming together to come up with this process. So essentially, we were presented with this challenge of how do we monitor recovery of oil and gas wells on the Colorado Plateau. And so it's kind of a daunting challenge. There's 90,000 records of oil and gas development of various sorts on the Colorado Plateau. And so what we were trying to do is figure out how we could find ways to compare each of these oil pads with a proper ecological reference. And so kind of the end from the beginning, what you see on the right here is we're trying to do identify areas around an oil and gas pad that are of similar soil, similar ecological potential that we could then use as a reference to compare to see how well an oil and gas, oil or gas pad is recovering. And so essentially we're looking for a reference area, an ecological reference. And so kind of the approach that we went about to do this was to find areas nearby that had a similar ecological potential when looking at the soils, the topography, and the lithology. But then the other thing we needed to make sure we constrain is the history of these sites, of the areas kind of adjacent to these oil or gas pads that we might be using to compare. And so we want to make sure that, because we know in ecology, the climate legacy will have, you know, a signal in the vegetation communities. And so we kind of drew on the first law of geography, stuff that's nearby is similar. And so we used neighborhood analysis to kind of, you know, after we draw some assumptions, to constrain that. And so in the end, what we want is to isolate the disturbance of focus and look, you know, directly at the recovery from that particular disturbance. So we don't want other signals kind of to get in the way of that. And so thinking about, so what is ecological potential? And so the way I'm defining that kind of draws on the classic soil factorial, which kind of if you look later in Hans Jenny's and Ron Amundsen's work, they kind of defined in more of a ecological perspective where you have feedbacks between all these different kind of phenotypical traits you might find when you actually go to a site and look at the vegetation, the soils, and you have active drivers, climate organisms that are putting energy into the system and they're acting on topography and permamaterial over time. So essentially what we see in, you know, something that has a similar ecological potential is through similar species composition and structure when it comes to vegetation and the behavior. So how hard you have to push a system in order for it to become degraded, and how long does it take for it to come back? So resistance and resilience. So the first dilemma we ran into is how do we capture soil variability at the field scale in an appropriate way? And so we did some data mining. We used the National Soil Information System in collaboration with the NRCS and used some digital soil mapping approaches to create a new map of soil texture for the Colorado Plateau using the theme in soil taxonomy of particle size in the control section. So this is a nice constraint on how you actually, you know, look at soil variability in kind of more of a simplified theme, so it's a little easier to model. And so we had pretty good results in coming up with this map, and it made sense on the ground, had pretty good validation metrics. So that's the first piece to our puzzle. So then we decided to kind of get a little bit more detailed within this neighborhood analysis, and in the never-ending quest for the best acronym, came up with the Automated Reference Toolset, or ART. And so essentially what we're doing with ART is trying to take that soil texture map, a suite of topography variables, and some geology-oriented ratios to combine all those within a neighborhood to match classes in that neighborhood to that central pixel, which is the oil or gas pad. So essentially when you look in that neighborhood, if you have the same soil texture, the same unsupervised topography class, and the same unsupervised geologic classification class, then you can identify all these other areas in the neighborhood of your disturbance to compare with. And so we just got this in print in SSSAJ, and it was a pretty fun paper to write. And so, okay, so we kind of figured out part of the first piece to this puzzle of how we find reference areas. And so we did a validation of this using some spatially dense plots that we have near Canyonlands National Park in Utah. And so essentially we simulated this process at all these plots. And so we cycled through each of these plots, looked in the neighborhood around them, and identified our reference pixels. And then if we had a neighboring plot to our central plot fall into that, we looked to see if that was the same ecological site. And so ecological site framework is essentially an ecological potential framework. It's conceptually similar to what we're thinking of here. And so what we found is that we did pretty good. 70% of the time we would match the right ecological site. So we felt good about that. So we've gotten to that first stage of our challenge where we're feeling good about these pixels that we're identifying as our reference around all of our oil and gas pads, something we can automate. We can go through and look at a lot of them in a short period of time. So we needed to add the next component of that. And so first thing we need to do is, so when we're not looking at plots and out in wildlands, we're looking at oil and gas pads. There's a lot of disturbance in landscapes. So we need to make sure you can see all these little white, kind of this pattern of white things we mass out. So that's, we tend to have clusters of oil and gas pads. So we needed to shield those out of the analysis. And so then we needed a metric to actually figure out how we quantify how well something is recovered. So we were working with our collaborators in Menlo, and they recommended we use the Soil Adjusted Total Vegetation Index. And so we look at those values in our neighborhood, particularly at those reference pixels that we identify, and then we look at that distribution of those SAPI values, and we compare that to the value at the oil or gas pad. And then we see what percentile, in this case, you can kind of see where this oil and gas pad has a pretty low value for SAPI, and all these areas that we identified as reference around them have higher values, and we come up with a quantile metric. And so that quantile ends up being our metric of recovery. And we chose quantile because we wanted to be robust outliers, because we know when we're picking hundreds or thousands of pixels in this neighborhood, sometimes we're going to pick ones that aren't right, and that, we saw that in our validation. So the quantile is a little more robust against outliers. So just to kind of visualize what that looks like, a couple of oil and gas pads that we visited in the last year. So you see the pad at the top on the left is a pad that was plugged in 2010. And you can look on the right, you see a reference site that we picked in the field. And so you can see that's quantile of 0.14, 14%. So you can see there's a lot of bare ground still exposed relative to the reference. Kind of makes sense, and you move down to the bottom one, quantile 0.39. You can see there's a little bit more perennial vegetation that's colonized the well pad. Again, kind of relative to a real similar reference site. These are black brush sites just north of Moab. So we did some validation, kind of doing the same thing with some BLM assessment inventory and monitoring plots, looking at relative difference in foliar cover and relative difference in exposed bare ground, and found decent correlations. So we're definitely picking up a signal of recovery, and in particular what we focused in on was our ability to detect pads that were doing really poorly. So if you looked down at the lower ends of these quantiles, pretty consistently we're always finding sites that are in really bad shape, and that's kind of what we really care about, because what we want to get at is ecosystem services. Can we monitor, figure out a point where on this quantile spectrum, maybe how far do we need to get to the right, how high a quantile do we need before we can kind of ameliorate dust production, which is a big issue on the Colorado Plateau, as one example. So that's when we start automating this and looking at a lot of oil and gas pads, this is what it looks like. So this is visualizing that quantile metric across about 2,000 oil and gas pads that we could validate in Google Earth Engine or Google Earth Pro in order to kind of make sure that these are indeed were fully developed oil and gas pads that were then plugged and abandoned. So you can see some spatial patterns. You can see down in New Mexico and in San Juan County in southeastern Utah, things aren't recovering quite as well. You go up to the Book Cliffs in Colorado, recovering a little better. Vernal Basin, perhaps not as well. So then we did a series of trend analyses to see if we could tease out any pattern to the recovery values that we got. And so we did some machine learning stuff, and we did some bivariate analysis, and we came up with three main things that popped out at us. First of all, certain vegetation communities are not recovering as well, and you see that in the generalized Southwest regap classes that we have graphed here. So you have on the x-axis here is that quantile metric. And so in particular, Badlands, which are some of the shale outcroppings to the Morse and Chinle Formation, blackbrush communities, canyon complexes, and grasslands are not doing so well in kind of the recovery patterns. We didn't see a trend over time, but we also had a limited data set. Our data set was that the pads that we examined were from 1997 through 2005. The dates and they were actually plugged and abandoned is kind of the term that they use. So that was surprising that we didn't see stuff that was plugged in abandoned earlier doing better than stuff that was plugged in abandoned more recently. But the other big patterns that we saw was how much the monsoon dominated precipitation patterns. So essentially, when you have monsoons accounting for more of your annual precipitation, sites were not recovering as well. And this actually is in line with some of the studies that have come out recently looking at C3 versus C4 grasses and how they respond to climate metrics. And C4 grasses tend to be much more sensitive to disturbance and changes in climate. So the other interesting thing, especially within the political climate of Utah, is that we found that with land ownership, wells that were on state land are actually in much worse shape. And so this is going to be an interesting development when in the dialogue about the Public Lands Initiative and Bears Ears National Monument and some of that stuff. So some interesting stuff that we were able to pull out with this analysis, and we think that it ended up working out pretty well. And so just to kind of recap this whole process that we've gone through, so the key to this was developing that 30-meter soil map of the Colorado Plateau. It was the main parameter that, you could basically, with the topography and the geology metrics, those kind of help constrain things a little bit, but you can basically do the neighborhood analysis just with that particle size map and get almost as good a result. So we're able to find good reference pixels. The soil-adjusted total vegetation index performs really well, and we got some interesting patterns that we saw. So we're working on expanding DART. We're working with Tom Hingle, and I would encourage you to check out some of his new products on soil grids. He just released a new 250-meter soil map of the world, and we're currently working on doing that at 100 meters for the lower 48. Should be out soon, actually. And with that, I'll say thank you for your attention.